From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Village in the Park in Daly City.
Potrero Hill.
Glen Park.
South Beach.
I live in Bernal Heights.
Coming up, we'll find out how a San Francisco nonprofit has survived for 30 years in a changing mission district.
ATA is the last bastion of what you would call underground freak culture left in the entire neighborhood.
Then we'll check out the collection of the largest film archive in Northern California.
Almost every film has some form of redeeming quality in some way, even if that quality is that you should never make a film that way.
And we'll go hit some skill shots with a women-only pinball league.
I was female world champion in 1994, so I was top 10 in the world at one point.
Get your quarters out. It's Cross Currents. Many housing units in San Francisco have rent control. But unlike many apartments, businesses and nonprofits don't have any rent protection, and that's causing many to leave. This year, more than 4,000 businesses will be forced to close or relocate in the city. With so many changes happening, you might wonder what it takes for a small haven for punks and artists to keep from being swept away. KALW's Jeremy Dalmas headed to Mission Street to see what it takes to stay small and funky.
Valencia Street in the Mission, it's gone through some changes. But if you look beyond the new restaurants, cafes, and boutique shops, there are hints of what gave it the reputation of having some of the most eclectic underground arts organizations in the country. I'm standing inside Artists Television Access, or ATA, watching a film of half-naked fake business people making deals on unplugged phones. The film is from 2000, and they're part of a series of performance art pieces protesting gentrification in the Mission. Tonight, in honor of their 30th anniversary, ATA is kicking off a 30-hour film marathon. That's 30 hours of non-stop underground films and media art up on their screen. Exactly the kind of stuff they specialize in.
This is an all-night program, so I can stay until I can catch the morning bus.
Katie Goodman used to volunteer here, and she's in it for the long haul.
I'll be here as late as they're going, and it looks like they've got programming all through the night.
Most of the seats are taken, and upstairs, the projection booth slash office is bustling with reunions. People are buoyant, because tonight, they're not just showing 30 hours of films, they're also celebrating 30 years of friendships and 30 years of staying small and scrappy. Marshall Weber, one of ATA's founders, is introducing his film.
And for this showing, we're actually using the original vintage VHS video cassette.
A video cassette. It's like a living time capsule. Kind of like how ATA represents a culture that used to be so common in the Mission. They started in 1984, back when television meant television. Like large, clunky, rabbit-eared blocks. And right now, there is a pile of them glowing in their storefront window. One video is showing former Mayor Willie Brown getting pied. Back in 1984, ATA was more of a workshop for editing video. You needed serious equipment then. You couldn't just shoot and edit something on your phone. ATA gave budding artists a place to put their videos together and a place to show them. Later, they shifted away from charging for gear rental and editing services and focused their energy on being a theater and community space.
ATA isn't here because we wanted it to be. It's here because the community wanted it.
Weber feels like being a small, do-it-yourself organization has allowed more artists the chance to show their work here.
You know, a lot of institutions are really stuck in this museum model where it's like, well, in 2 years, we'll have a slot for you if you can, you know, whereas ATA was always, if someone good walked in the door, it was like, we'll squeeze you in here. We'll give you a night there. We'll give you a week in the gallery. Waiting a year? That's like waiting a century.
This casual, approachable, door-always-open atmosphere made them a lot of friends.
give someone their first show, they're happy about it. They're gracious. They bring a little audience, and it kind of snowballs.
And that snowballing is how ATA does business. They are volunteer-run, meaning no staff. And no staff means no payroll. And not having to spend money on things like salaries and advertising is one of the main reasons that they were able to survive the dot-com boom of the late 90s, when commercial rents went up more than 40% in just 2 years. Just a Neighborhood Over is another modest arts organization with similar beginnings, Counterpulse. Both organizations are from the same generation of small, do-it-yourself art spaces that lean political. Keith Hennessy is a dancer who helped start the space.
Countless numbers of people made performances or choreographed dances or put together visual exhibitions or put together sex parties or workshops or political events.
Like ATA, Counterpulse was easy to work with and inclusive. And like ATA, they built up a community slowly and naturally. But during the dot-com boom, there was a lot of pressure from the landlord to move out. At the same time, they were getting more ambitious.
We started to have bigger curatorial visions. Those required money, and then if you want to play that game with funders, you then need to professionalize around that.
And so, unlike ATA, the new vision meant that they would restructure and become a more typical nonprofit so that they could get grants. They hired staff, signed a lease, and in 2005 made the move to Mission Street in the Soma District. Now, after 10 years of renting the Soma space, they are making the jump to buying a building in the Tenderloin. A huge leap for a group that was basically run out of a living room 10 years ago. Their communications director, Shamsher Virk, told me that being ready years ahead of time is key.
It's become really clear that preparation is everything for these things. So there's very little you can do when you're facing eviction next month or a doubling of your rent next month. You need to reach out at least 18 months before the end of your lease, let's say.
Which is especially relevant back down Mission Street at ATA because their lease is going to be up in 18 months. In the 80s, their connections with the neighborhood got them a long-term, cheap lease. Now, it's unclear if they'll be able to afford to renew their lease at the end of 2015. But they don't want to leave the city, the mission, or even this block. Back at the 30-hour film marathon, I meet a volunteer named Joshua Harper. He leads Against the Glass storefront and explains to me why he came out tonight.
ATA is the last bastion of what you would call underground freak culture left in the entire neighborhood. It's like a miracle it's still alive, so I'm here to support it.
Choosing to be non-hierarchical and volunteer-run has invigorated them and helped them last. But being weird and welcoming has made ATA one large offbeat family. And when their lease is up in 18 months, we'll find out if that's enough to let them survive into the next generation of their neighborhood. In San Francisco, I'm Jeremy Dalmas for Cross Currents.
If you've got a nonprofit survival story, we want to hear it. Tell it to us on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, or email us at news@kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We'll stay in the Mission District for our next story. It's about a business that's found a way to survive despite the odds, or maybe because of the odds. It's called Oddball Film and Video, and it houses more than 50,000 unusual films, most in their original 16mm reel. The collection has everything from vintage erotica to outlandish commercials and quirky after-school specials. KALW's Jenny Butler takes us inside.
I'm standing in front of what looks like a secondhand furniture store in San Francisco's Mission District. A small sign on a nondescript door reads, Oddball Film and Video, second floor. At the top of these stairs is the largest film archive in Northern California, but you never know it. I'm led into a small warehouse with seemingly endless rows of 16mm film reels. They're stacked floor to ceiling with no clear organization.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine.
A slender man with glasses sits behind the front desk.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
That's Stephen Parr, the man behind this entire operation.
There you go.
Okay, thanks.
Every Thursday and Friday night, Parr invites the public inside his archive for screenings, compilations of short films under a single theme. Tonight is Strange Cinema, a monthly screening of Oddball's most unusual footage. We cozy up on old barbershop chairs and battered couches in the archive's back room, which is lit by a rotating disco ball hanging from the ceiling. This makeshift theater seats about 30 people, and tonight, almost every seat is filled.
Is anybody here for the first time? Great. My name's Stephen. Welcome. Tonight's program is something that I put together and been thinking about for a long time.
In tonight's lineup, we'll see experimental films either made in the Far East or influenced by Eastern films. Parr describes some as whimsical, others as spacey, and one as a film the audience will never want to see again. Then the lights go out.
Which depicts every delicate movement of the Indian classical dance. Here at a dance school.
An Indian drama appears on a pull-down screen. The characters have painted faces and elaborate costumes and are telling stories through dance. Parr founded Oddball nearly 30 years ago. At the time, he was a video artist, making background images for nightclubs and galleries. He was tired of searching for materials from other archives, so he started his own. Soon, producers of Hollywood movies, commercials, music videos, and television wanted access to Parr's eccentric footage, so he made a business out of it.
My intent really was to create a small community of people who are interested in sharing a visual experience and really kind of experiment and push forward the context of cinema.
The idea is to take the audience's expectations about film and turn them upside down. Many of Oddball's films don't fit into traditional genres. Some have alternative story structures. Some have no story at all.
So a lot of the films that we screen here are some films are educational uses. Some films are made for instructional purposes. But when you put them into another context, they kind of bounce off each other and create a kind of a unique viewing experience.
A unique viewing experience, like a Japanese fable about a family of ants and a lazy grasshopper.
In a nearby garden, the girl ants are finding some tasty ant food.
Most of Parr's collection was donated from people who decided their films were worthless or that the medium was just too much work to keep.
Almost every film has some form of a redeeming quality in some way, even if that quality is that you should never make a film that way.
Since Oddball began in 1984, the archive has screened more than 800 unique programs and developed a loyal following. Tom Gilroy, a filmmaker from New York, has been to 5 screenings in the 6 weeks he's been in town.
I was blown away basically because nothing like this really exists in New York. And I'm not really aware of anything existing like this in the United States. It's kind of like a museum visit, a history lesson, an entertainment outing, but then an odd kind of theater experience.
And maybe that's why fans keep coming back to Oddball. Because no matter how many times they return to the archive's back room, they'll never see the same thing twice.
Don't be foolish. Let's get started. Papa's waiting for us.
For Cross Currents, I'm Jenny Butler.
Find a link to a calendar of Oddball events at our website, kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. And now from oddball to pinball. Did you know that playing a pinball machine used to be considered a criminal activity in Oakland? The 80-year-old ban was created back when pinball machines lacked flippers and were used for gambling. In June, the city officially decriminalized the machines. Still, pinballing is technically illegal in the city of Alameda and other cities around the U.S. That hasn't stopped a large pinball culture from forming in the Bay Area. There are tournaments, six leagues, and a pinball museum, and a few local world champs.
There's a really healthy pinball scene in the Bay Area.
Eka Schneider had been playing pinball for years when she decided to add to this growing culture by starting a women's only pinball league in Oakland called Bells and Chimes. KALW's Angela Johnston brings us this profile of the world's first women's pinball league.
Ellen Frankel slips the last of her quarters into the Medieval Madness pinball machine and wipes the sweat off her forehead. It's her second game of the night, and she's trying to get a new high score. And although she is shy to admit it, Frankel is a real pinball wizard.
I kind of do have a pinball claim to fame, yes. I was female world champion in 1994, and so I was top 10 in the world at one point.
She's the only woman who has ever won a national pinball championship. And tonight, she's joined by a dozen other women at the High Life Bar in Oakland. They're all members of Bells and Chimes, a women's only pinball league.
All right, so let's play pinball.
The league started a year ago when Eka Schneider, who's a nationally ranked pinball player herself, noticed that she was just about the only woman to show up at tournaments.
I thought it would be a nice way to encourage more women to get into pinball if I had a women-only league.
So she founded Bells and Chimes. Schneider tells me that pinball's gender issues run deeper than the images of bikini-clad women plastered over many of the machines.
Boobs, boobs, boobs. There's just boobs all over pinball machines, all of them.
Or sexist notions about women in general. It's about access. The top 25 players in the world, according to the International Flipper Pinball Association, are all men. At a national competition last fall that attracted 400 players, Schneider said fewer than 40 women competed. Two of them were members of Bells and Chimes. And for female pinball players in the Bay Area, the male-dominated pastime isn't always the most welcoming.
It can be pretty intimidating to walk into a room full of like 60 dudes and you're the only girl and you don't know anybody.
Not to mention the assumptions that exist before you even walk in the room.
That women don't know what they're doing. Like, I am not like the greatest pinball player in the world, but I'm quite good at pinball. And when I'm playing on location, I am constantly having men approach me and like try to tell me really basic things about how to play pinball.
So at Bells and Chimes, Schneider tries to create an environment that stresses fun over top scores.
I am Sally, and I want Goldwing's soundtrack to be like the soundtrack of my life.
And when someone does well, everyone celebrates.
It's good just to, I think, have more women playing and being visible about playing.
The league's success has even led to the opening of a second chapter in New York City.
There's definitely, in the past year or two, I've seen so many more women at tournaments and competitive events. So women in pinball are becoming a lot more visible than they have been in the past.
Back at the Medieval Madness game, Ellen Frankel has already racked up millions of points. She's knocked down castles, rescued princesses, and fought off a pack of trolls. That cracking sound means Frankel had a solid game. She scored enough points to get a replay or a free game. In fact, she got way more than she needed. Her final score is 62 million.
Well, it's a new game in here, so it's, yeah, for now. For now, yes, it's the second, but it won't last long, I promise.
For Frankel, the score is just another number. What's more important is the feeling she gets from playing.
Each pinball game is different. It's not just each machine being different. Every game that you play is different. It's controlled carom in a way. It's lovely.
And she says to be playing with a group of women that all feel the same way, it's even better than winning.
Scoops again!
In Oakland, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
The Bells and Chimes Pinball League meets every other Monday at the High Life Pub in downtown Oakland. Find details at KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Jeremy Dalmas, Leela Day, Jack Detch, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Marcy Fraser, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Alexis Luna Torres, Ted Muldoon, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we love hearing from you, so email us at news@kalw.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of your support, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll hear how the 2011 nuclear explosion in Fukushima, Japan, has changed the way residents think about food.
So basically, if you see grown in Fukushima, to you that means safe.
Yes, yes.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by the San Francisco band Ice Cream. You can hear them live this Thursday night at Milk Bar on Haight Street in San Francisco. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.